is brought to you by Head Start Basketball.
Hey, Hoopheads, transform your training this May with our partners and friends at Dr. Dish Basketball. Their Dr. Dish shooting machines are undoubtedly the most advanced and user-friendly machines on the market. Get $1,000 off any commercial machine in the month of May. Learn more at drdishbasketball.com and follow their incredible content at Dr. Dish B-Ball on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. Mention the Hoopheads podcast and save an extra $300 on the Dr. Dish Rebel, All-Star, and CT models. Visit drdishbasketball.com for details. That's a great deal, Hoopheads. Get your Dr. Dish shooting machine today.
Hi, this is David Thorpe from TrueHoop.com and the Pro Training Center, and you're listening to the Hoopheads podcast.
Prepare like the pros with the all-new FastDraw and FastScout. FastDraw has been the number one play diagramming software for coaches for years. You'll quickly see why Fast Model Sports has the most compelling and intuitive basketball software out there. For a limited time, Fast Model is offering Hoopheads listeners 15% off FastDraw and FastScout. Just use the code HHP15 at checkout to grab your discount, and you'll be on your way to more efficient game prep and improve communication with your team. Fast Model also has new coaching content every week on its blog, plus play and drill diagrams on its playbank. Check out the links in the show notes for more. Fast Model Sports is the best in basketball. If you're looking to improve your coaching, please consider joining the Hoopheads Mentorship Program. We believe that having a mentor is the best way to maximize your potential and become a transformational coach. By matching you up with one of our experienced mentors, you'll develop a one-on-one relationship that will help your coaching, your team, your program, and your mindset. The Hoopheads Mentorship Program delivers mentoring services to basketball coaches at all levels through our team of experienced head coaches. Find out more at hoopheadspod.com or shoot me an email directly, mike@hoopheadspod.com. Follow us on social media at hoopheadspod on Twitter and Instagram, and be sure to check out the Hoopheads Podcast Network for more great basketball content. Coaches, do you have a point guard or leader you're going to be counting on next season to run the show for you? Don't leave next season to chance. Thousands of coaches send their players to a point guard college camp each summer to learn to think the game, lead a team, and run the show. Your players will be smarter, better leaders, and better equipped to foster a championship culture next season in practice and in your locker room. I've seen firsthand how PGC camps have had a huge impact on players and coaches that I know, both on and off the court. You can go to pgcbasketball.com to find a 5-day, 4-night camp near you. That's pgcbasketball.com. Hello, and welcome to the Hoopheads Podcast. It's Mike Klinzing here with my co-host, Jason Sunkel. We are jumping on to talk some NBA conference finals, wrap up the conference semifinals. I think I hear something in the background, though, Jason. I think I hear it. Well, I heard there was a Wonder Boy. Many teams would not employ, but you don't really care for Euros, do ya? So where would he go? The fourth, the fifth, or would he fall and be a Nick? The baffling Kings took Bagley over Luka. Hallelujah. 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 All right, I think he's here.
Oh, yeah.
I think he's here.
I'm glad. Listen, he's really, really good, Mike. He's really, really good. He took down the presumptive
favorites.
Yeah, he took them down. I was trying to find the clip from Pat Beverly today. Oh, man, Pat Beverly was brutal today. He said they benched the wrong person. They should have benched Chris Paul instead of DeAndre Ayton. Oh, here we go. This is the clip I wanted to play for you, Mike. Here we go. Yeah, this is a good one. And then we'll dive into the episode.
CP3, is he going to be a Hall of Famer? No question about it.
Yeah.
Right? No question about it. Do guys in the NBA go to sleep early the night before playing the Phoenix Suns? Hell no. No.
You mean as a team, or would you talk about Chris Paul individually?
Chris Paul individually.
Okay.
No. I'm going to Steak 44 over there in Phoenix. I'm going to have me a nice little wine, probably sweat it out, and but the pregame shoot around and get ready for Chris Paul. Steph Curry, I'm going to bed at 8 o'clock. Mom, don't call me. My girl, don't call me. I'm locked in right now. It's two different monsters.
There you go. That was Pat Beverly today on First Take. I don't know. We don't have to get into this whole Chris Paul discussion, but I just thought I wanted to play that too, Mike. So there you go. How Luka and Chris Paul.
How fast has the narrative flipped on Phoenix? And we can get into that a little bit here in a second. But holy cow.
It's brutal. All right. So I only have two questions for you tonight, and they both are revolved around the Dallas Mavericks. So, okay. So Luka Doncic and Spencer Dinwiddie are the first pair of teammates to each have 30 points in a game seven since these two players did it in 2002 in a conference finals game.
Shaq and Kobe.
There you go. Against the...
I don't know, but I heard or read that recently.
Conference finals. So who did they play in the conference finals in 2002?
In what year? 2002? That would have been Sacramento?
Yeah. Good job, Mike. Good work. All right. Luka Doncic is the second youngest player in NBA history with 35 points and 10 rebounds in the Game 7. Who's the youngest?
What's the stat? 35 and 10?
35 and 10 in a Game 7.
In any series?
In any series. Game 7. Second LeBron. Youngest. Nope. Gotta go further back than that, my man. Like, way back.
Wilt?
Might have to go even further back than that.
I mean, it's a standard answer. Further back than Wilt? Well, George Mikan?
I'd say this player played in the 50s and early 60s.
Bob Pettit?
No. He also may have been a broadcaster at some point.
May have been a broadcaster.
For the team that he played.
Tommy Heinsohn?
There you go.
Wow. Tommy Heinsohn. Getting some run, getting some love on the Hoop Heads podcast.
You never would have guessed that one.
Never would have saw that coming.
There you go. So those are the only two trivia I came with tonight because I didn't want to, you know, load it up. But
all right,
so
I'm one for two. I'm shooting 50%.
Yeah. So let's start there, Michael. We've kind of talked about it. We've danced around it. Let's start with the Western Conference. We normally start with the Eastern Conference. Screw it. We're going to go Western Conference tonight, Mike.
Sounds good.
Okay. So Mavericks. Obviously blew them out, okay? The Mavericks won by 33 points over the Suns on Sunday night. That's the second largest win in a series clinch game versus the best team in the NBA in league history. The only time that it's happened more than that was in 1948 when the Philadelphia Warriors won by 39 points over the St. Louis Bombers in the then BAA semifinals. I think that the story of the game is the fact that you and I were texting right, you know, at... half. Spencer Dinwiddie is going to score 20 points. You're going to let him come off the bench and score 20 points. You aren't winning that game, Mike. Luka had as many points as the Phoenix Suns in the first half. He had 27. The Phoenix Suns had 27 points. Mike, that's ridiculous. 27 points and a half in a playoff game. There was something else I saw in regards to these stats. Let's see if I can find it. With the 27 points thing. So Luka had 27 points in the first half. The Suns had 27 points in the first half. Doncic is the first player in the last 25 postseasons to equal or exceed the opposing team's point total in a half.
It's pretty good.
Just pretty good?
It's pretty good. Hallelujah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I guess the question here is it more about how good Dallas is, or was it about how bad Phoenix was in that game, at least in the first half, and clearly the game was over at that point?
I honestly think it's the Phoenix were so bad. Like, they were atrocious. I mean, so it was 31, I believe it was 29-22 or something like that. 31-22, and I was like, oh, this game, you know, this could be good, because we'll get there in a minute, but that the first game wasn't a game either. Can you name a day where two game sevens were as big of a thud as those two game sevens, Mike?
Like, they were pretty bad, both of those games. The Bucks game was a little bit closer. They had an 8-10 point lead there in the first quarter, and then just completely fell apart. Phoenix decided not to wait that long to fall apart, and just decided, hey, we're gonna fall apart right away in the second quarter. We're just gonna completely go down, and the effort there was just ridiculous. And Dallas had a ton of things go right, and Luka just controlled every aspect of that game and the final three games of that series. He just took over in a way that there are not and have not been very many players that could take over a game the way Luka has taken over these last three games against Phoenix. I don't know that currently or that in NBA history there are that many guys that could do and orchestrate a game the way that he did. But you look at Phoenix, and a week ago, we're sitting there, they're up 3-2, and everybody's saying, well, Phoenix has been the favorite all year long. They clearly had the best record in the league by, what, 8 or 9 games in the regular season. And I think most people, including myself, thought that they were headed to the NBA Finals, and they come up in this game and just completely disappear. The starting lineup shot, I think, somewhere in the neighborhood of 14 for 49 for this game. You have Bridges at 3 for 11, Crowder 2 for 9, 8 and 2 for 5, Booker 3 for 14, and Chris Paul, who's everybody's roasting, he's 4 for 8, so he at least shoots 50% from the field, the only guy in their starting lineup to do that. And it was just to watch that and watch what Luka did to them, and then to watch them not be able to have any type of response at the other end of the floor for a team that had as great of a record as they did during the regular season. They just didn't have any answers. And then you get into the post game and you have the Chris Paul quad injury. You have the DeAndre Ayton. Why did he play? Why did he not go back in? Monty Williams saying that's an internal matter, which then leads back to, before the season, they don't give Ayton the contract. Now you're going to the offseason with, is this guy really going to be a part of their team going forward? You have the whole Sarver case. You have Sarver's history as a cheap owner in a situation where he's going to be paying Booker, Paul, Bridges already. Now you're going to pay Ayton, or maybe you're not going to pay Ayton. So then you start looking at, well, what are the avenues they have to ship Ayton out of town? Do they sign and trade him? Do they let him walk? Do they put him out there in restricted free agency, see what kind of offers he gets, and then match him? There's a week ago, none of these questions were even being thought of. And now.
And we didn't know we were going to get JaVale McGee chucking up 3-pointers in junk time yesterday.
No, you didn't.
That was pretty exciting.
You didn't know you were going to get the Aaron Holiday steal on Boban. Almost touched off a skirmish at the end of the game.
Yeah.
I think for me, Phoenix laying an egg is a huge part of the story. But the real story is that Luka is just at a level that not many guys in the league can reach. And we saw it in just about every series that's been played in this playoffs, that what it really comes down to is how good is your star, and game to game, can your role players make shots? And that's really honestly what it comes down to. And if you have a situation where one team's role players are making shots and one team's role players are not, guess what's going to happen? The team whose role players are making shots is going to win. And if neither team's role players are making shots, then it's going to come down the wire. It's going to be star versus star. And if both teams' role players are making shots, same thing. Comes down to star versus star. But if one team is getting production from their role players and the other team's not, it's more than likely that that team that's getting production from those other guys is going to win. And it's really amazing when you look across the board. I think you could probably trace and you say, okay, take the top three players off each team, get rid of their stats, and just look at the three-point percentage of players 4 through 8 in every rotation. And I bet you'd find a pretty strong correlation between high three-point percentage for those guys and winning percentage for their team. To me, that's really what it comes down to.
Yeah, listen. The other thing, so when I watched that game yesterday, I was like, God, Phoenix made it to the finals last year, and like Jay Crowder was like the third or best player on that team. Maybe fourth best player on the team. How is that possible? He couldn't even do that with LeBron. Like, how can you rely on that guy? I'm sorry. I understand Jay Crowder has upside, but like, I can't rely on him.
He's the same guy though as any other guy who's not one of the three best players on his team, where some nights Crowder's going to make shots and he's a physical, tough defender. He's a guy that's been in big games, but one game he's going to go 2 for 9 like he did in game 7. Other games he's going to go 5 for 9 or 6 for 9. And you never know any given night. You never know what you're getting. You don't know which one of those guys you're going to get. Are you getting the good Crowder? Are you getting the bad Crowder? You have no idea. And it just comes down to, do guys make shots? Look at the Bucks-Celtics game, right? I know we're in the Western Conference, but in the Eastern Conference yesterday, Grant Williams, just look at his stat line yesterday. 7 of 18 from three. He takes 18 threes. 18 threes for Grant Williams. It's insane. The guy's not a three-point shooter. I mean, theoretically, he's not a guy that you're building your offense around if you're Boston, that, hey, we got to get Grant Williams more threes. You're just, if you're the Bucks, you're like, we got to pick our poison and we're going to live and die with Grant Williams making threes. And guess what? You died by it.
That's the first time in Grant Williams' career, though, that he ever led the Bucks in scoring, or the Celtics in scoring.
Yeah, it's probably the first time he's taken 22 shots in a game in the NBA, I would guess.
I don't have that in front of me, but.
But it's, let's put it this way. He hasn't taken a whole lot more. I guarantee he hasn't taken 18 threes in a game. How about that?
So, yeah. So going back to the Suns, Mavs game series, there was one other thing, Mike. Spencer Dinwiddie and Luka Doncic scoring 20 points in the first half each. They're the first teammates to do that in a game 7. Since these two New York Knicks, I'm giving you the team because this is an informal, these two New York Knicks in 1997.
I scored 20?
20 and a half in a game 7.
20 and a half in a game 7 in 1997.
Two Knicks.
Sprewell.
No, but you're on the right team.
Larry Johnson.
Still on the right team. Not the right players.
97.
Come on. Who's the gimme? Who's the theory named after?
Ewing in 97 scored 20 points and a half?
Yeah.
Wow.
And this guy That's might great. Have a pro- and this other guy might have a problem.
Might have a problem. John Starks.
Alan Houston. Houston, we have a problem. I was trying.
Okay. Sorry.
So Ewing and Houston scored 20 points in game 7 against the Heat.
Well, there you go.
That was informal. It doesn't count against you, Mike.
Okay, good. I'm glad it doesn't count on my record. keep that off my record. All right, let's wrap up the Phoenix part of this real quick. So I think what's interesting, like I said, is that a week ago, none of these conversations about what's the future of the Phoenix Suns were really being talked about at all. And now you have to look at it and you go, the Sarver investigation. We haven't heard a whole lot about it over the course of the season, but
so you're going to float the, you're floating the theory that Simmons was touting today.
No, not at all. I'm not saying that the Sarver situation has any impact on the team's play in game seven or a reason why they didn't make the NBA finals despite having the NBA's best record. I'm not in any way, shape, or form suggesting that. I think even if crazy stuff was coming out about it, which it's not, but even if it was, to me, I'm not sure that affects how Devin Booker plays in game seven, right? You just figure out a way to make it work and play and block that out if you're a professional basketball player. I don't think that has an effect.
You'd think.
But when you look at the future of what this team is, if Sarver is sort of in limbo this summer because we don't know what that result of the investigation is going to be, then maybe there's contract situations like with Ayton. Maybe there's potential moves that could be made or not made based on the fact that the ownership situation is in turmoil. So there's that piece of it. You have Chris Paul, once again, no real talk of injury other than people speculating, is he hurt? And then comes out after they lose, he's got some kind of right quad injury. So does that explain
Do you think that's legit, or do you think he's just saying that? Because it's an easy excuse, Mike.
You want to give him the benefit of the doubt, right? You don't want to think that any guy is just throwing out a fake injury to make up for his poor performance. And yet you look at how he performed up until game three of this series, and he was pretty good. And then all of a sudden he wasn't pretty good. But the reality is you look at the track record of Chris Paul, and he goes long stretches where he's really, really good. And then he has stretches where, unfortunately, he's either hurt or not as good. And Chris Paul is one of those guys that I think if you're a fan of Chris Paul, there's lots and lots of evidence that you can point to that he's one of the best clutch players in NBA history, that he's one of the top two, three, four point guards, wherever you want to put him. And yet, if you're not a fan of Chris Paul, I think it's very easy to pull out things that would lead you to believe that he's not as clutch as the statistics might say. And I don't know if it's a fake injury, but I think if Chris Paul is on your team at this point, you're deluding yourself if you think that he's going to be able to make it through four rounds of playoffs at whatever. Now he's age 37, so next year at age 38, and then the following year at age 39. It's not happening unless you're sitting him the entire season or he's playing every other game.
Like, he had a month off this year,
right,
too.
Maybe you only play him every other day or every third game to try to keep him healthy when it's time for him to play in the playoffs. Yeah. So you have the Chris Paul thing, the DeAndre Ayton thing. It was already something that they were going to have to deal with in the offseason because they didn't offer him the extension prior to the year. Now you have whatever happened in the game today where he doesn't play very many minutes. Monty Williams gets asked about it. He says, hey, that's an internal matter. Doesn't sound good in terms of that relationship between Ayton and Monty Williams.
It's almost reminiscent of something else that happened last year, Mike.
What's that?
Ben Simmons.
A little bit, where right in the immediate aftermath of the game, there's some comments made that could certainly rub a player the wrong way, that maybe this thing fractures and who knows. I mean, I guess you look at it and you say, it seemed like Phoenix was set up to have a nice long run of being a contender, but there's a world where
shut, buddy.
There's a world where Ayton is no longer on this team next year. And Booker, where does Booker's ultimate ceiling lie? I don't think he's on the Luka Doncic level of superstardom, the Giannis Antetokounmpo level of superstardom. So he's a notch below that. And Chris Paul is not going to be better next year than he was this year. So I don't know. I mean, there's other teams I think around the Western Conference that are going to be better just by natural improvement. And then you have the Clippers and the Nuggets that have guys coming back, that both of those teams are going to rightfully think that they're contenders, not just for the Western Conference, but for the NBA title. So Phoenix's window went from being pretty wide open a week ago to maybe on its way to being slammed shut very quickly. And the Mavericks, look, I talked about them early in the year, and I've been kind of on and off with Dallas as a sleeper contender to get to the NBA Finals. And they definitely have woken up as a true contender. They're no longer a sleeper. I think you look at this next series and how does Phoenix, I don't know what Phoenix does with Doncic. So there's just no, Yeah. What did I say?
You said Phoenix. You were
Sorry. What do the Warriors do with Luka? I don't know what they do with him. I don't know who you guard him with. You going to put Wiggins on him? Good luck. And put Otto Porter on him?
What about Draymond?
I think Draymond is sort of like, it's sort of the same thing as Giannis. Like there's value in him, I guess, guarding the best player, but the bigger value is him on a lesser player, directing traffic, being in passing lanes, being a guy at the rim that's in position all the time to take things away. They'll probably give Draymond a shot on him, but
yeah,
I just don't see anybody that can deal with Luka in any way, shape, or form. So do we want to talk quickly about the Warriors?
Well, that's what I don't think we need to spend a whole lot of time. You know, I think the only thing we need to talk about is that game five performance is what gives you pause a little bit about the Warriors. But I also think they probably went into that game thinking, oh, we're going to win this. And maybe they got a little too cocky. Clearly they were the better team with Ja out. You know, the Grizzlies were hanging in there though. You got to give them credit. Give the Grizzlies a lot of credit for, you know, hanging around. And you know, there were points in that game six that I was like, oh man, is this really going to go game seven games? Like,
they were right there. They were right there. It was, you know, 89, whatever. I think it was 89, 88, and Dylan Brooks dribbled the ball off his foot. And all of a sudden, it was that sort of old Warriors of they went on like a 9 or 10-0 run in like 45 seconds.
It was like when we watched the Strongsville-Olmsted Falls game, and you felt like, oh, you said to me, it just feels like at some point, Olmsted Falls is going to just pull away here. And then all of a sudden, it was like they scored like 10 straight points, and it's like, oh, there it is. Like,
right. That's exactly, it's like one team scores so easily, yeah. Or there's just things that you can see that you're like, it's just not going to happen. Like, you're just watching it and you just know that unless something goes horribly wrong, that it's only a matter of time before sort of that dam breaks. And that's kind of what happened there. And Grizzlies had a great season and they played really well without Morant in the regular season. And they played really well without Morant in the playoffs. But you still need that guy in big moments. You need that best player. And you can make up for it in a lot of different ways. And the Grizzlies are better defensively when Ja's not on the floor. So that's part of it. But ultimately, when push comes to shove, it still comes down to, if it's a close game, your best player has to be there to deliver. And Memphis didn't have anybody to stop that run. And that was the difference. That was the difference in the game. So I haven't been impressed by Golden State in terms of how well they've played. Yeah, that game five is a little alarming, but I think it's even more than that. I just don't think, when you look at who and what they are now, and again, I'm comparing them right to their heyday. So there's no way you can even remotely compare them to the Durant teams. Those teams were ridiculous. Nobody was touching those teams. I think, though, even if you look at the iteration, the 2015, 2016 version of the Warriors, this team's clearly nowhere near that team. I don't think Steph is as good right now. Klay clearly is a shell of that player that he was in 2015, 2016. And Draymond is significantly worse offensively. And he's probably close to where he was defensively back then, but I still don't think he's quite the defender that he was 4 or 5 years ago. So they're a good team, but honestly, I look ahead, and we can do that now if you want, but looking ahead to this next matchup, like I said, I just don't see anybody on that roster that can effectively deal with Luka. And it's going to come down to Dorian Finney-Smith and Reggie Bullock and Dinwiddie and Kleber. Can those guys make threes? And if they do, Dallas is going to win. They're going to win because Luka's going to get his. There's no question about that. And I think that Dallas has enough versatility defensively to at least make Golden State in this current iteration to make them work. And the fact that Draymond's not looking to score at all, I think Dallas is going to be able to take advantage of that and just lean more heavily and shift the floor towards Curry, towards Thompson, and take away some of their easy looks and say, hey, Draymond, go ahead. You want to play Grant Williams and take 22 shots in a game or take 18 three? That's not happening. And if it does, you're playing right into Dallas's hands. I think when Dallas has the ball, Golden State is going to have a lot of trouble dealing with Luka and their offense. Whereas I think on the other end, I think Dallas can hang on the defensive end when Golden State has the ball and make it difficult for them to be able to score. I really do. And as I look at this series, I just think Luka's on another level. I think he's taken it to the point where he's now a guy who, hey man, we're all going to jump on your back and you're going to take us to where we want to go. And that's not to say that he can do it by himself, because clearly the Bucks series showed that no guy can do it by himself. You got to have guys coming along for the ride. So he's going to need his role players to play well. But every indication at this point in the playoffs is that they're going to. So I expect Dallas to win this series and make it to the NBA Finals.
Well, so here's what I'm going to say, Mike. I think Dallas is going to win, but I'm picking Golden State because I've said Golden State since the beginning of the playoffs.
Okay.
So I'm not going to waver. I already lost my Milwaukee pick, so I'm going to stick with my other one.
Okay.
Just because, I don't know, there's just something. Like, I feel like Dallas is a really, really good team. And I wouldn't really be surprised if they won. But there's just something that makes me say that this is going to be a finals I'm not going to enjoy, Mike.
You mean the West? You mean the NBA Finals or the Western Conference Finals?
Oh yeah, going to be Celtics Warriors Finals, and I'm going to want to. There's not a. I mean, I at that point I have to root for the Warriors, which is really, really bad. Like, but I can't. I can't root for the Celtics.
Can you root for a tie? Is there such a thing?
I just can't root for. I can't root for the Celtics. I can root for the Warriors. I can't root for the Celtics. And I just, for some reason, think that's what's going to happen. If Dallas makes the NBA Finals, I have a clear team to root for. It will be like 2011 all over again.
That's where I am. I'm down to Dallas. I'll root for the Heat against Boston, but I'm doing that extremely begrudgingly, only because I despise the Celtics. And on the other end of it, I can't root for the Warriors. And Dallas, I just think Luka, where he's at and the way he plays, is it's unlike what we've seen from anybody else, because the type of athlete that Luka is, when we say athlete, we're talking about running fast and jumping high, and Luka does neither one of those things. He's athletic in the terms of he's so strong and his footwork is so good and he's so skilled with the ball, and that's what makes him fun to watch. And yeah, I'm down to one team that I really would like to see win the title out of these four. I think any of the other three, I would be somewhere from I can't believe that team won the title. So
we can agree that we're both rooting for Dallas and Miami in this round, right?
Correct.
Can agree with that? Okay. So I'm just going to stick with Golden State because that's what I've picked.
All right, I'm going Dallas in six.
Well, I'm going to go Golden State in seven.
Your first impression is everything when applying for a new coaching job. A professional coaching portfolio is the tool that highlights your coaching achievements and philosophies. And most of all, helps separate you and your abilities from the other applicants. The Coaching Portfolio Guide is an instructional membership-based website that helps you develop a personalized portfolio. Each section of the Portfolio Guide provides detailed instructions on how to organize your portfolio in a professional manner. The guide also provides sample documents for each section of your portfolio that you can copy, modify, and add to your personal portfolio. As a Hoopheads Pod listener, you can get your Coaching Portfolio Guide for just $25. Visit coachingportfolioguide.com/hoopheads to learn more.
All right, let's move to the East.
We've kind of already said some pieces about the Bucks Celtics series. You know, Giannis played his butt off, but he didn't get any help, and that's really what it comes down to. He's the first player in NBA history. I'm sure you saw this stat, right? First player in NBA history in a series to score 200 points, 100 rebounds, and 50 assists in a single series. All right. He was going into the game yesterday one of only four players in NBA history to have 200 points, 80 rebounds, and 40 assists in a playoff series. The other three players were Elgin Baylor, Oscar Robertson, and LeBron James, and they all lost the series. So now he's the fourth player to have that stat line and lose the series, Mike. The LeBron time that happened was the 2015 finals, when he should have been the MVP. Still saying that. I will say that to my grave, that he should have been the finals MVP in a losing cause. And gave it to a guy who couldn't stop him. But whatever. Sorry. No offense, Andre. No offense, buddy. Anyways, other than that, I mean, they just played abysmally. The Bucks were terrible. Grant Williams was on fire. Tatum played okay. Brown, I thought, was huge down the stretch. Marcus Smart didn't look very good in the fourth quarter, and that turnover he had, that was really, really bad, and it didn't end up hurting them too much. But I just think I have to say it, Mike. I think the better team won, and I understand that Middleton's injury probably made the Celtics the better team. But the way they're constituted, I do think the Celtics were the better team. As is currently constituted, that is.
I agree with that. If you thought that the Bucks were going to win, it was because you thought that the Bucks were going to win on the strength of what Giannis could bring to the table, and you couldn't really ask a whole lot more from Giannis in this series. He didn't shoot it, I guess, theoretically as well as you might have liked. He missed, especially in Game 7, he missed a bunch of layups, and he had stretches during the series where he missed, but every single moment that he was out there, it just felt like he could pretty much get whatever he wanted unless he was going to get called for a charge. And otherwise, he's Euro-stepping his way to the basket, and he's just so strong, and his passing has gotten so much better. He's at a level that I think – We're gonna see where Luka takes this, but I think the discussion of best players in the league, where we stand right at this very, very moment, again, defining best player in the game, if I had to win a game, which guy would I want on my team? I think those two guys are right there at the top. And Giannis proved it over and over again, and the Bucks got nothing from their supporting cast. I mean, Lopez was good. Holiday played a typical Jrue Holiday game, but the rest of that roster, you look at Wes Matthews, Grayson Allen, Connaughton, combined, they end up going, let's see, 1 for 11, 2 for 17 from three. From those three guys. So you're just not going to win when you don't get any production whatsoever from the rest of that team. And then I think the one thing, the challenge continues to be for Giannis, that because his jump shot is still the least reliable part of his game, even his mid-range, which he's way better at now, it's still a shot that he'd rather not take, which you can completely understand because once he gets ahead of steam going to the basket, he's almost impossible to stop. But what it does mean is that it's easier. I don't want to say this. It sounds dumb to say it this way, but he's easier to stop, or maybe it's that he has to work harder to get a shot than, let's say, Luka, right? Luka dribbles it up. He can take that step back jump shot, and that's a good shot for him. Whereas with Giannis, he's pretty much got to get to the rim, and getting to the rim over and over and over and over again, even if you can do it, that tends to wear you out. And as you're driving to the basket, when there's 2, 3, 4 guys and they're building that wall in front of you and you kick it out, and his passing is so much better. But when you kick it out and those shots don't go in, that's got to be demoralizing to a certain degree.
Yep, and I agree.
Eventually, it just wears you out. You can't make up the math when the Celtics shoot 40% on 55 three-point attempts. There's just no possible way. It's impossible. And the result was what we saw. And I think your statement about the Celtics being the better team, I think in this series, I think they were the better team. I think if you put Middleton back, I think hard to argue that having your second best player in a game 7, a series that was tight all the way back and forth, that Milwaukee doesn't win it. And then this series, I guess it's weird because you had 3 huge outlier games on the Celtics side, right? You had 2 Al Horford games, games 3 and 4 back to back. And I know the Bucks won one of those, but those were 2 games that I don't think Horford has played 2 games like that back to back probably for 7 years, where he's even approached that level. And I'm not talking in a playoff game, I'm talking regular season. So those were 2 games that were complete anomalies, and the one game wins him a game in the series. And then you have Grant Williams yesterday, it was ridiculous. And you take 18 threes, you make 7 of them, and kudos to him. He was great. And Tatum, I think, went to a level that I didn't know that he was capable of. I still, even after watching that, I'm still like, man, I've seen too much of Tatum look different than how he looked in this series. But you've got now what he did in that series, and now what he's done in this Bucks series, that he's starting to, if not already, creeping up into that discussion of guys that you can count on. And I'm not sure that he's reached the level of Giannis or Luka. I'd still put him a notch below those very best.
I agree. Yes.
Durant. He's not the Durant. He's not where LeBron was. He's not in that class. He's probably a step below that. So is he a top 5 player? No. Is he a top 6 or 7? That's where you start to maybe think. But he's maybe at one step below that. At least now. Now, again, if he leads the Celtics to a title and he has 2 more series like what he's done in these first 2, maybe you got to start thinking about it. But I'm still not quite there yet 100% on Tatum. But I'm a lot more there than I was 2 weeks ago. Let's put it that way.
Yeah. I agree. I just think, listen, Boston played really well. And you got to just tip your cap to him. I think the bigger question, Mike, is Budenholzer. we haven't talked about him at all. What is he doing in that game yesterday? There were several times that he had lineups out there, and I'm like, and I know you're constrained to, but like, to what you have and what you have available. But he clearly didn't make any adjustments at halftime, right? He got outworked.
I feel like he's been way better. I feel like in this series, they did do a bunch of different things. They tried different lineups. They tried different pick and roll coverages. They tried different guys on different players from the Celtics. And I think it's more you're just constrained by the fact that you look down your bench and there's no good choices. And whatever choice you make, there's a potential upside and there's a potential downside. So you play Grayson Allen, and the downside is that he can't guard anybody. The upside is offensively, maybe he can make some threes. And he's had games in the playoffs and in the regular season for Milwaukee this year where he made shots. And if he makes shots, then what he's doing at the defensive end of the floor doesn't look quite as bad. But I don't know where he's supposed to turn. If you go, there was a lot of talk before game seven that maybe they're going to play Javon Carter. And yeah, Javon Carter maybe would have been an upgrade defensively, but it's one more guy out there on the floor that Boston's not going to guard. And it's one more person that's in the lane now for Giannis to have to work his way through. So I think from a personnel standpoint, I don't have a huge problem with what Bud did during this series because I just think he didn't have many options. And I think that he did a good job overall of mixing up what they tried to do. I don't think it was a terrible Bud series. I do not blame this series at all on Bud. When I look at it and I say, where are we at with this roster if you're the Bucks? And how can we upgrade it? Again, you're missing your second best player. So there's not many teams up and down the rosters here that if you're missing your second best player, that it's not going to have a huge, huge dramatic impact. And I think most people at this point I think the Celtics probably are the favorite. And the Bucks took them to seven games without their second best player. So I think it's a roster. I think it's more about the roster building and the construction of the team as opposed to, hey, we got to get Coach Bud out of here because he doesn't know what he's doing. I think Budenholzer actually had a really good series, as good as I can remember from him. I don't think he was the reason they lost in any way, shape, or form. Let's put it that way.
Yeah. Really quickly, Mike, I did see something today. You realize that the Celtics got all their players from the Kevin Garnett trade, right?
That everybody that they have came through the Garnett trade in some way, shape, or form?
Yes. Did you know that?
I guess, like, I could have guessed that, but I don't know that. I didn't know that. So, I couldn't go through the whole thing.
So here's what I'm going to tell you. The Nets pick, okay? The Nets pick, that picks and all that, ended up netting them, Isaiah Thomas. Well, then it ended up getting them Kyrie, and then you got with their 2016 and 2017 picks, they got Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum in back-to-back years, both from the Nets pick. And then they ended up getting what was the other one? There was one other thing they ended up getting. Oh, crap. Not Grant Williams, but someone else came back. Oh, then they got Kyrie, obviously, as a direct result, and that turned into that turns into someone else, too, that's currently on the roster with the one Kyrie went to the Nets. But so essentially, I know it's like a long laundry list, but the two big ones being Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum came from that Garnett-Pierce trade. You know, Garnett averaged 7 points as a net. Pierce averaged 15 points in 100 games for Nets. So
Garnett was never healthy.
Yeah. So
he was basically a shell of himself by the time he got there.
The third pick they got in that draft ended up getting traded when Isaiah Thomas came to Cleveland, and we ended up picking Sexton pick.
Yeah, that was the Sexton pick. I knew that was the Sexton pick.
Those three players came from the Nets trade. Now, obviously, we don't know if the Nets would have picked those guys, but just kind of the thinking about it, it's kind of crazy a little bit. Anyways.
So off-season question for the Bucks is, how do you upgrade on the wing? That's the Bucks off season, is how do you find more wing depth, guys that you can play in playoff series that can knock down threes? How do you find a guy like Dorian Finney-Smith or a guy like Reggie Bullock? How do you take a chance on a guy who maybe has been a little bit down? You're obviously not going to have big money to spend with the roster that they currently have and the salary and payroll, but you got to find guys who are veterans minimum guys or guys that are a little bit above that, that you can slot in, that are going to give you the ability to knock down threes and play defense, the 3-and-D. And can they find those guys? Who knows? That's what everybody in the league wants. So sometimes you get lucky and sometimes you don't. And then the reality is it still comes down to, in a game seven, do those guys, whether they've produced or not all year, do they make shots in game seven? And if they do, like Grant Williams did, you probably win. If they don't, like Grayson Allen, Connaughton, and Wes Matthews, then you probably lose. And it's as simple as that.
Yep. All right, so the other Eastern Conference series, I don't think we need to spend a whole lot of time on this, Mike.
Can we just talk about James Harden for – can I just talk about him for 10
yes,
seconds?
Yes. Go ahead.
That was atrocious. It's just atrocious. And then for him to get up in the press conference afterward and say that the ball never came back to me, the guy's a clown. He's an absolute clown. And if Philly pays him $10, it's too much.
All right.
I know they traded Ben Simmons for him, but whatever. Just if you're Philly – if you're Philly and you re-sign that guy, then you deserve everything that you get. I hope as soon as they re-sign James Harden, I hope that the next day Joel Embiid walks into a press conference and says, this team's directionless and I want to be traded. That's what I hope happens.
I love Philly. I love the Sixers.
I love the Sixers. What?
There's no way that Joel – that they sign him without Joel's blessing, right?
I wouldn't think so.
So that's not happening. Well, you're, the scenario you just stated is not happening. But I understand. I completely agree. If Joel signs
mid-season
off
next year, mid-season next year when Fat Suit James Harden is tanking, is trying to tank his way out of Philly to go
to
who knows where.
Next year, Mike.
I mean, oh my God. Well, I don't know. I mean, let's put it this way. Is it far-fetched to think that if they sign Harden that it's not going to go well? Is that far-fetched?
No, it's not.
So – mid-season next year, Harden's averaging 17 points a game, is completely disengaged on defense, is out of shape. The Sixers are struggling a little bit. Is it completely out of the realm of possibility that Harden or that Embiid comes and says, hey, the process is over. It hasn't worked. We're no closer to a title than we were 5 years ago. I got to go play. I don't know how much of my prime I have left. Trade me to wherever. Pick a city. I can see that scenario happening 100%. If I'm Philly, I don't touch James Harden with a 10-foot pole. I don't sign him to another year. I don't sign him to a 2-year deal. No, I don't want him. I don't want him. Okay. Where are you going with this guy?
I don't, we say it every episode, Mike.
I know. All right, move on. Let's move on. Right, so Miami.
Miami wins. I don't really need – we don't need to spend any more time on I don't want to spend time talking about this game, that game. I mean –
We're done. Let's preview Miami Boston. Give me your take.
Lowry's out. I just don't see a way that Miami wins game one. And if Lowry's not functional, and they've got like four players, by the way, that are listed as questionable tomorrow night. Did you see this? Let's see if I can find it.
Miami does?
Yeah. Lowry's out. Listed as out. Oh, man. I saw it. It was Woj. I think Rob. Marcus Smart is also questionable tomorrow night. He's got a foot sprain.
I have the injury report right here in front of me.
Okay, go ahead.
So Kyle Lowry status out. Caleb Martin status day to day. Gabe Vincent status day to day. Max Strus status day to day. PJ Tucker status day to day.
Okay, all right. So maybe it wasn't. It's not as bad as they said, but I mean, they've got five players on the injury report. Obviously, Marcus Smart is questionable, as is, and Robert Williams is out. Robert Williams, you know, he's out.
Robert Williams is not listed on the injury report on ESPN. He's not even listed.
Oh, well, I thought I read that he was out, but maybe I'm wrong.
There might be something that's missing, but I'm looking at it on ESPN.
Right. Well, regardless, listen,
He didn't play in game seven, so.
Yeah. Here's what I'm going to say is the Celtics are winning this series, Mike. And I think they're going to win it in five or six games. I don't think the Heat stand a chance.
Heat culture?
This is my reverse jinx. The Celtics are going to win this series in five games or six games.
All right, I like it. I can abide by that.
I'll either be a genius or an evil genius. I don't know which one.
I think it's a sneaky game one. I think game one is sneaky important because Miami's kind of been sitting, right? And Boston comes off this just unbelievably physical, unbelievably competitive Milwaukee series where after game five, most people had them dead to rights that they weren't going to be able to come back. And yet somehow they dug deep and found a way. And when you look at this particular group of Celtics, that was always a knock on them, right? That they couldn't dig deep, that they weren't tough, that mentally they weren't always as engaged as they needed to be. They didn't play hard. They didn't play together. Think about all the team meetings they had in the last couple of years and Marcus Smart ranting about how their team just doesn't get it and whatever else that was going on. And at some point during the season, that switch flipped and all of a sudden they were ready and they become a completely different team. I think game one is really, really important because I think if you're Miami, you're at home. Boston's coming off this emotional game seven, this Bucks series. I think Miami has to win game one. If they win game one, I give them a decent chance of being competitive and maybe even winning the series. If they somehow lose game one at home, then I think it's probably a fairly short series. I don't know if it goes four or five, but I definitely, if Boston gets game one, I don't think it's going seven. And I don't discount what the Heat has done over the course of the season. I don't think that they're as good. To me, they're, I don't know. I don't really like where Golden State's at either. So I guess my two favorites would be Boston and Dallas. But I think Miami, because of their culture, because of that toughness that they have, when I think about Bam and I think about Jimmy Lowry, who knows if he's going to play or not play, but even the guys that they have, PJ Tucker, like these guys are not afraid, intimidated. They're not going to be worried about what anybody says to them or the pressure of playing in the Garden or whatever. They're just going to come out and play and they're going to compete. And I think Miami is more limited. I don't think that they're as versatile as what the Celtics can be, but I think Miami has a toughness about them that is going to make this series maybe more competitive than we think. I'm probably ultimately going to lean towards Boston winning it, but I think it's going to be a lot closer than maybe a lot of people think. Because I think Miami does, on the defensive end, they can do some things with Boston. They can match up. They can play different guys. And then offensively, they don't have one guy on the level that the Bucks did with Giannis, but I think they have more options, more ways that they can go. I think they're going to have to figure out a way to make sure that they can keep Tyler Hero on the floor defensively, because they're definitely going to need his offense. And you're going to need the very best version of Jimmy Butler. You're going to need that NBA conference finals from the bubble where Butler was just going off. And he's had a really good playoff. I think he's averaging 28 a game in the playoffs. So he's been playing really, really well. If he can continue that, I give Miami a chance. I'm going to pick Boston right now. I'm going to pick Boston. I'll say Boston in six.
Okay, Boston. So you're going Boston and Dallas.
Boston, I'm going and Dallas.
Boston and Warriors.
All right.
So
let's hope we don't get yours.
Yeah. So I guess before we do our dad jokes, Mike, like, I want your take on one thing, and I know we're going longer than we already did. Do you see they named the Eastern Conference and the Western Conference MVP trophies? Did you see this?
Yeah, the Bird and Magic trophies. Yeah.
Explain to me how they, like, this is no disrespect to Larry Bird. I want to be clear here. I'm not trying to sully Larry Bird here. How could you go with a Larry Bird MVP trophy and not Michael Jordan? Please explain this to me.
I thought you were going to break out your LeBron take, and at least there I could say, well, you're not going to name it after an active player.
Well, but it should have been Michael or LeBron before Larry Bird. Come on now.
I think that's all about the Magic Bird rivalry and the fact that when you identify East versus West, you think Boston versus LA, and I think that's what it is. I think if you had, it's a package deal. And so I don't think if it was the Magic Johnson and Michael Jordan trophy, it wouldn't make as much sense. I know it would make more sense that Jordan clearly would be a better representative of the Eastern Conference, and eventually probably LeBron would be an even better representative for that award. But I understand what they were doing. It's a combination platter with Magic and Bird together. So I'm okay with it. I don't really care, whatever. I don't think Michael Jordan cares. And who knows, maybe eventually they're going to name the MVP trophy after Jordan. I don't know. Who knows? But
okay.
I don't think – to me, it doesn't bother me because I understand it's a package deal, Larry and Magic together and whatever. Nobody really cares about that anyway.
Okay. All right. Listen, I just wanted to ask you your opinion. So, all right. Okay.
Okay.
All right. I got my dad joke, Mike.
Okay. I'm ready. Go for it.
So yesterday my wife told me to go to the store and get 6 cans of Sprite, Mike.
6 cans of Sprite?
Yeah.
Okay.
I got all the way home after the store and I realized I picked 7 up.
All right. That's pretty good. That's pretty good.
That's the only one I got tonight, Mike.
Okay. I got two. Did you know that I was deathly afraid of elevators?
Something about the levels. I don't.
I've been taking steps to avoid them, though.
Oh, okay. Got it. Okay. All right.
Why do ducks make horrible public speakers?
I don't know.
They use foul language.
All right. We'll end it there, Mike.
Sounds like a plan. All right. So we are finishing this up here at 12:58 a.m. on Tuesday morning. So tonight, we are looking forward to game one of Celtics Heat.
Yeah, and I think, Mike, the other thing I meant to say is we're kind of – I don't know how regular these are going to be, but I know our plans will shift depending on our tea leave situation. But I think once we get to the finals, we'll probably for sure record after every game. Is that going to be our goal like it was the last 2-3 years?
I think so. I think that's what we're going to try to do. Yeah, I think that makes sense. We'll plan to do it. And then
maybe we have to do a check-in after the first 2 games of all of these series. So that would be what? So Tuesday, that would be Friday night, maybe, if Friday or Saturday.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
We're going to do a check-in.
We'll plan to try to give that a shot. And so, see what we can do.
See what happens, right?
Yeah, let's see what happens. Let's see if we can make that work. We should be able to. So, all that being said, thanks for checking out this NBA episode of the Hoopheads podcast. We just put out a brand new roundtable number 41. What is the most underrated skill in coaching? So we got some interesting answers there, and it's an episode that you'll enjoy and get some, hopefully, some ideas.
No one said throwing chairs onto the floor like Bobby Knight.
No one did say that. So no one did say that. We somehow avoided that particular mishap. And then coming up on Friday, we have an interview with the brand new head coach at the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee, Bart Lundy, who came from Queens University in Charlotte, North Carolina. And Bart and I talked a lot about building a new program, getting a new job, what that process is like, saying goodbye to your old job, your old players, and then coming in and trying to figure out, hey, what does this roster look like? What is my team? What do I need in order to be able to have success? And so it was a very interesting conversation with Bart. I think you'll enjoy it. So please check that out when it comes out Thursday night at 10 p.m. Eastern. So again, thanks for checking out tonight's NBA episode, and we will catch you on the next one. Thanks.
Thanks for listening to the Hoopheads podcast, presented by Head Start Basketball.